Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, Jamie Rocks here. I wanted to give a quick shout out. I forgot to do it during the show. I don't know, I just spaced out or something. But I wanted to give a quick shout out to the fine folks over at MetalBabeMayhem.com. MetalBabeMayhem.com. They're the ones who got all this together tonight's episode and introduced me to Teresa Topaz and whatnot. And we had just a great time doing the show and everything. And that wouldn't have happened without MetalBabeMayhem.com. Check out their website. There's tons and tons of cool stuff on there for both guys and gals. Very, very cool rockin' clothing and apparel and pens and patches and all kinds of cool stuff, baby. All leather goods, all kinds of cool stuff. So check them out, MetalBabeMayhem.com. Now on with the show. Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. I sure am glad you did. What a crazy, crazy week we've been having. This show, actually, our guest tonight was supposed to be last Wednesday, but I don't know if you guys remember, there was that big Facebook outage, and oh, it was a big thing. Everybody in the tech world were chewing their nails and, you know, upset. But collectively, everything got worked out, and so we moved last week's Wednesday guest to tonight, and I'm very excited to have her on. I'm a big fan of her music. She is just a, you know, Mozart of the guitar. It's phenomenal. Mrs. Teresa Topaz. Teresa, how are you?
Hi, James. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm doing very well today. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's been a rainy day down here. I'm in South Florida, just up from Miami, Fort Lauderdale area, and we've had a lot of rain. So it's one of those, it's hard to get anything done, not from anything physical, just your mood. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I'm in California, and we're seeing that too over on this coast as well. We had a beautiful couple of days and it felt like summer and everyone wanted to go rush to the beach. And then all of a sudden yesterday we woke up to a rainy day. So we're sharing that cloudy weather.
I hear you. Even my dog, I got to take the dog out and she just looks out the door and she's like, no, Pop, I don't think so. It's let's just put that on hold. She's a snoot anyway, but definitely when it's raining.
What kind of dog is she?
I have a Chinese Sharpei.
Oh.
Like the wrinkly ones.
Sharpeis are so sweet.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, she's pretty good. She's good with us. We've had to hire the trainer to get her to be good with everybody else. That's part of the problem is she's so darn cute. People automatically want to socialize with her and whatnot, and you know she wants to see their insides, I guess.
So she's very protective over daddy.
Oh man, yeah. It's bad, you know. A bird flew by the other day and she was like, you know, barking at it. I'm like, the bird's not gonna do anything, May. Settle down.
No.
But yeah. Crazy. No, I wanted to get into this because you were such an accomplished musician and really just an out of sight guitar player, man. I mean, just phenomenal. A guitar player. When did you get into guitar? When you were a little girl, or how did the Teresa Topaz story happen?
How did it happen? you know, I always say that I was one of the lucky ones when I was a kid that knew exactly what I was put on this earth to do. And nice. I started with singing when I was about six, and I was in choir, I was in theater, anything that had to do with performing, I was in it or helping to create it in school. So believe it or not, when I was really young, I really wanted to play the classical harp. And my parents, yeah, it's like a $50,000 instrument. So they said, why don't we start you with something else? So I remember the first time, right?
And we love you, kid, but
but I heard Jimmy Page play a 1959 Les Paul, and I like did the whole like turn around and went, what's that? Like that specific tone. It had to be that guitar. And
right.
that was the day I decided, okay, I'm obsessed with this now. And I remember when I was 12 years old when I got my first guitar, and my grandmother, we went down to McCabe's guitar shop in Los Angeles on Pico, and she wanted to get me a classical guitar. So there's always this, you know, yin and yang. Do you start them with nylon? Do you start them with steel? You know, I'm rock and roll all day long. So if you want to play that style of music, you should play a steel string instrument. And
right.
this is the heyday of Nirvana. And, you know, Kurt played this maroon Strat with a white pickguard. And I would not leave without that guitar. I mean, I threw a temper tantrum. I just would not even entertain a nylon. And I slept with it for like weeks on end. Like it
wow.
was what I cuddled with. And I just had my ear glued to, you know, to the radio in the boombox, listening to, you know, Jimi Hendrix and Nirvana and Zeppelin and trying to figure out the songs. And I didn't have a lot of a social life. I was just home playing that guitar and trying to figure out music. So,
mm-hmm.
And I started composing it at 14, and, you know, I may have put it down for a little bit throughout life. You know, it kind of sometimes takes you on a different path for a short period of time, but it's pretty impossible to keep me away from that instrument for too long. So it's just inevitable. You know,
let me ask you this. Do you still have that guitar?
I really wish I did. I unfortunately I've had two guitars stolen from me, and that was one of them. And it kills me. It was a Squire Strat. It was a, you know, $150 guitar, but it meant everything to me because it was from my grandmother and it was my first one. But, so unfortunately, no, I don't have that one anymore, but there's been a lot of instruments since then. So,
well, you know, the saving grace, I'm not in the music business. I'm a painter by trade. That's what I do. I paint pictures of people, but all of my friends are either making music or movies. That just seems to be, the people I tend to hang out with. And,
mm-hmm.
I've known a lot of guitar players over the years. And the interesting thing, I mean, your story is tragic. Nobody wants to get anything stolen of any nature, especially something that has significant value, you know, personal value like that. But, you know, I've known so many guitar players, and their stories are different in that they don't have the first guitar because they, you know,
mm-hmm.
had to pawn it or sell it or try to get it, you know, traded to try to get a new one. Yeah, you know. And so at least there's that, you know. But still, you know, oh man, that's rough. Theft stinks.
It's, you know, it's hard,
stinks
but
bad.
At the end of the, there's, you know, it's kind of the same thing. Like my mother's a fine artist. And so you two
mm-hmm.
in the same realm, and it's, you know, I always ask her, like, well, do you have the first painting that you ever painted? And so it's,
no,
you know, her, no, you don't, you know? And so it's just the beauty
mm-hmm.
of it. You can paint more and that you learn from that. So, I mean, it's just, it's hard with gear, with musicians, because it's like a lot of times people will sell instruments. Like, I'm just not using it. It's like, well, you really think about this. Are you sure you want to never own that again if it's had this kind of history with you? So, but again, you know, with instruments, there's a saying, you know, if you're holding on to pieces that you're not using, it's kind of bad juju in my world.
Right.
And so I think that's why musicians rotate through their gear so much. But when you really fall in love, like my main guitar is Rose, my Cherry Heritage Les Paul. I wouldn't trade that
nice.
For the world. I'm going to be buried with that thing. That's not leaving my grip ever. So
now,
if it serves you, you keep it. And if it doesn't, you pass, you know.
Right. Now, I know now you're a professional musician and a lot different. I know a lot of cats who, especially people when they get to a certain age, typically men, I will say that at least the ones I know, and they have their man cave. And, you know, they wanted to be the next Randy Rhoads back in the day or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
or, you have their Fleetwood Mac band. They had these dreams, you know, and then life happened and whatnot. But now they have a man cave and they have, 14 guitars on the wall with very expensive little holders and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a room or a mass of guitars like that or not really? That's more for the man cave, so to speak, or the woman cave.
I think my... I think my studio is a woman cave in a sense. I've always been, you know, I can always relate to that a little bit more. I've always been a tomboy. So I do, you know, understand the rules in order to have that kind of cave. I mean, I have probably about 3 guitars that I'm using on this project right now. I have more guitars, but they're not my main focus. I don't have a 50 guitar collection yet, but I personally, as a musician, you know, you watch these like rig rundowns, and it's like, you know, you see, you know, everyone from you know, Joe Perry to everybody. And it's interesting,
right,
because you see musicians that like either have these insane collections and a guitar does something different for, you know, every song, or you just have a couple that you rely on. I'm a little bit more towards, you know, Rose, that guitar is the best guitar I've ever played, ever owned, ever probably will play. I mean, it's, this guitar was built on a day where the person, you know, found out that they were getting a raise. It's just
right.
Perfect. And, you know, but it is necessary for, I have another Gibson that I just overhauled. And then that's going to live in an open tuning, because to go from tunings back and forth is kind of a nightmare when you're on stage. So it is it's a necessity to have a few, and it's also different voices. So it's like, you know, my Strat's going to sound a lot different than my Les Paul will, but primarily when I go on stage, it's going to be 3 guitars that I have, you know, an acoustic, 12 string, the slide guitar, and then my main electric, and they all live in different tunings. So I, you know, to me, it's just, when you fall in love and you have that chemistry with that instrument, it's kind of hard to replicate it, because every one of these guitars, they all have different stories, and they all have different songs in them. So it's a different feel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's fascinating to me, because, and you're obviously, like I said, a professional and whatnot, professional musician. And I hear in your voice, and what you're saying, you know, it reminds me, I have friends that are into different things. I have a friend of mine that, you know, he's like James Bond describing a wine when he comes to cigars. He can take a puff of a cigar and tell you, you know, what hill of tobacco was raised on. You seem to be that type of person with guitar or music in general.
I am.
Like, you know, you can hear it. Like, you're like, oh, that's a da-da-da-da-da. That's fascinating to me,
well,
to have that ear, you know.
I think, you know, with, you know, there's a strong movement with women in music that's been happening over the last couple of years, and women are starting to, you know, become a more dominant force in the music industry. And, you know, for me, it's, if I'm going to master an instrument, I better master it. So I actually took the time to gain the knowledge, and I became a certified guitar technician. And there's too many situations where I've been on, you know, the road or going to shows, and I had something small, like an output jack, my ground, what, you know, came loose, and I didn't know what to do, or a tuner broke and I didn't know what to do. And for me, the biggest key is to be as self-sufficient as possible. And so I'm, you know, now at the stage where I can pretty much build an instrument from, you know, I mean, inside and out, rewires, switching out stuff. So, I mean, to me, that you have the ultimate control over it, because, you know, instruments, they breathe. Wood, it expands and it contracts with heat and cold. And so there's this huge misconception about, you know, what maintenance is actually needed for the instrument. And especially when you're recording, like I'm in the middle of, you know, the new record right now. And so that instrument's got to be completely intonated and not be out of tune. Otherwise my engineer will kill me. So, it's again, you know, being coming back to even, there's been so many times when, you know, I'd walk into a gig and they think my engineer's the act and I'm just the girlfriend. So it's, you know, the more you know,
hopefully that'll start getting better, you know. Well, I tell kids the same thing. You know, young people, I shouldn't say kids, I should say young people, you know, they're like, oh, I want to do what you're doing. You know, what advice can you give me? And I'm like, well, spend less time trying to be an artist and more time being a painter and learning how to paint. You know, that's the big thing. Learn your craft. Know your craft. If you're going to do something, know what you're doing. You know, I mean, that's
exactly.
You may not meet as many girls that way, but you'll meet better ones.
Right.
all I'm saying, you know.
Well, believe me,
I
don't have
that.
Much of a
email.
Social life with. Yeah. You, well, when you spend and you really are mastering your craft, no matter what it is, it's like you may not have as much of a social life as some others, but, you know, that education to yourself is vital, and it actually makes you stronger in your field because you've taken the time to master it. And that's all the greats. And it doesn't matter if it's art, photography, music, it doesn't matter. The greats, they did spend thousands and thousands of hours mastering it between the music and the instrument or the canvas or the you know, whatever medium that we're dealing with. So I think it's very important that to take it very seriously, because you have, it's either A and B with musicians. Either they just plug and play and, you know, rely on the engineer to do it, which is totally fine. And then you get people who geek out about it. I'm just a geek.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Velvet Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi folks, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books, like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool. And these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com. 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 Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
Well, you know, the great thing, it reminds me of when I was a little kid, a million years ago, knee-high to a tall Indian. My father, he was a mechanical engineer and an inventor, and he loved working on cars. That's one of the things he loved to do. Me, I'm a bit of a prince, always have been. I don't like getting my hands that dirty, you know, with grease and stuff. It's just not my personality.
Yeah, it's dirty.
And he'd always want me to help him work on cars. And I'm like, oh, Papa, how pedestrian. I'm going to be a famous artist. You know, I'll pay people to do that. And he said something very powerful that I didn't think so at the time, but now it has proved to be completely right. He said, how will you know if you're getting ripped off if you don't know how this process works? You know, you
mm-hmm.
have to know. It's a good, even if you're paying somebody, you need to know what they're doing, you know? And
yep.
that is so true. And when you said that you became a tech, it reminded me of that. Here's a lady who knows how this works, you know? And
yeah,
obviously,
it's very important. You know, I mean, even with the cars, it's like, you know, my dad did auto. We call him Mr. Hollywood, but he started Auto Expo back in 1969. It was the first privately owned futuristic car show. And so I always grew up around cars, and I have such an obsession with them that I started to learn how to do, you know, just minor work on my own, and I can do tune-ups. The Volvos are much easier to work on than Mercedes, I will tell you that. But It's I have a technical mind frame, so that kind of stuff is fun for me. I know my limitations with it. But he, you know what, your dad's right, because it's, you know, I've had so many mechanics try to rip me off because I'm tall and blonde and they expect me to not know anything. And you're right, more you know, the more you know.
Well, you just come from a place of strength, you know, you can deal better.
Yeah.
It's in anything, you know. And you had mentioned, you know, people mistaking you for the engineer's girlfriend and whatnot. I cringe as, you know, a member of half the human population. I'm just like, oh, that's terrible. You know, you hear more and more of these types of stories are coming to light, especially in the current social movements and whatnot. Is it getting better as a female musician, professional female musician out there in the recording world and whatnot? Good.
Yeah, it is much. I mean, I think in the beginning, you know, it's depending on where you are, if it's a new demographic for you, if you're on tour, if it's in, you know, every part of the country is a little different. So, you know, when I was first starting out, it was pretty bad and it was hard, but I just took it from getting angry and getting affected by it to looking at it as a challenge. And that was a much easier way to cope with it. And, you know, the more I just didn't take no for an answer or, you know, cowtail to whatever, you know, these people, everyone's got an opinion.
Right.
So I think over the years, you know, they've realized that I'm not just a hobbyist, that this is actually the real deal. I am a real musician. I'm not going to listen to the negative. There's always good and bad with everything. And every musician in every stage of their career is going to hear the good and bad. The best thing you got to do is just ignore it. And the more I do that, the more those people then convert to actually acknowledging and respecting what I'm doing. So it's, you know, it's hard though. It is really hard to not listen. You can have 5,000 amazing comments and there's one person, and we all do this, but we focus on that one person. It's like, wait a minute, what am I doing? I'm going to ignore that comment. I'm just going to appreciate all of the good. So just got to, life is all about perception. So,
you know, and I have a theory on that. It's my theory of, I call it the theory of the jerk. And, you know, if you gather any group of people, 100 people in a room, I'm telling you, there's at least one jerk in that 100 people.
Well, that's balance.
And yeah, you just can't, you know, you're right. But sometimes it's hard because I've had people say, and sometimes it's really dumb stuff too, you know, and it'll just hit a nerve that just happens to be exposed that particular moment. And it sticks with me. I'm thinking about it 2 days later and I'm like, man, what am I doing? That's dumb. Forget about that. And then I have to push it out of my mind, you know, and just move on with my day.
I think we all are guilty of putting our focus in the wrong direction. And, you know, it's we're human. And, you know, we just got to remember to look this way instead of looking that way. So the good thing is what you actually, you know, follow through with, you know, just ignoring it. I remember hearing a couple of days ago that Lady Gaga had, when she was in school, there was some Facebook group that was created, and there were 12 people. I don't know if they were all girls, but they basically started a Facebook group saying Lady Gaga will never be famous, and has a photo of her and has an X through it. And it's amazing. Girls, like when little girls, are, they can be like lions. They're just, you know, vicious.
Big girls can be lions if you...
Well, very true, right? But I think we all go through this where, you know, you experience that. And I think the strong point is moving past it and, you know, take it as a challenge and prove them wrong. That's what I've done. I mean, you have to.
You just do. I had mentioned we got this dog about a year ago, and a little over a year ago, actually, and a year and a few months. And the dog was very, she's 180 degrees different than when we first got her, but she was very aggressive, and upset. You know, I'd take her for a walk, and if she saw somebody, you know, man, she wanted to just, you know, it was on. And we hired a dog trainer, and the dog trainer said, well, a big part of, you know, she watched things and whatnot. And she said, I hate to tell you, Jamie, a big part of this problem is you. And I said, what are you talking about? I treat this dog like a princess, man. I, you know, she's, this dog won the lottery when we got her. And she said, no, she goes, I've seen you, and you will look at the, you'll read the newspaper or whatever, or yell at the TV for a little bit, get all worked up online about something. And then you take the dog for a walk, calm down. She goes, that dog's feeding off your energy. You need to start getting yourself in a better place. You know, the dogs, to the dog, it's like she sees this other person. She's like, I got your back, Pa. I got your back. Let's take him out right now.
I'm protecting you.
Yeah, you know, and it's what it is that's how she thought she should be viewing the world because, you know, I'm all worked up and whatnot. And so I've, over the past year, taken a real conscious effort not to get myself worked up, you know, and maybe not read the news, that particular newspaper or whatever, turn the TV off. And, you know, yesterday I was working on a painting yesterday and I was talking to my, my fiance Danny about it. When I was working on this painting, I'm 90% done of this painting. And my elbow hit a paint pot of a black paint and it spilled all over the canvas. And I'm just like,
oh no.
Now, normally, the year ago, Jamie, my blood pressure would have went up. I would have been very upset. I counted to 10 and I said, okay. I said, that sucks. But now, and like you were saying, you have to look at it as a challenge. I said, now I have to hide this and fix this painting. I said, let's see. I bet I can do it where no one will ever even know this happened. Yeah, I can hide it in such a way. And I spent the next 2 hours doing that. But I got to tell you, at the end of it, I felt so accomplished and in such a great mood because I had accomplished this challenge. I had knocked it out. You know, yeah, it happened. That didn't matter. The challenge was set before me, and I solved it. And that was very a very good feeling. I you know, and just a different
way
of looking
at it. It's nice when you can overcome it.
Right.
Yeah, it's nice when you overcome that, and I can't even imagine that feeling because of the amount of work it takes to correct it. But you know,
right.
I think a lot of times, you know, I meditate every day. I have to, otherwise I you know I feed into too much. So you're right. It's like energy. We all are energy. Music is energy. Everything is just squiggly air, and it's, you know, we emulate
like that,
and animals are so sensitive that they pick up on it. You know, it's like if I...
Oh, absolutely.
I have a little kitty. I have a little 5-pound Siamese, snowshoe Siamese Lynx Point, and she's the first cat that stopped growing when I told her to at 6 months, and now she's 6 years old and full grown and still 5 pounds. But, you know, she, as soon as... If I have a moment and I kind of lose it for a second, I've gotten very good at just kind of getting it out for a moment and then regrouping, and she'll run. You
right.
know, she'll run out of the room because it scares her. So animals are
right.
so... you know, perceptive to that. And I know exactly what you mean by making a mistake. I literally yesterday, I have a big protein smoothie every morning for breakfast.
Uh-huh.
And I sat down to start answering emails. And all of a sudden I turned and I knocked it all over my amp, one of my amps. And I just sat there.
Oh, man.
Oh my God. I haven't even had a sip of my coffee yet. And this, and I got to clean this
right.
up. And I just kept telling myself, I'm like, there's nothing to get mad over. The amp needed to be cleaned anyways. So,
right.
And, you know,
right.
it was fun. I was able to prevent myself from losing it. But those kind of little things, like, there's, you know, it looks, it's an opportunity to maybe take your focus in a different direction. So everything happens for a reason. And there's this wonderful saying by a yogi that my mother told me, and it says, can you do something about your problem? Yes, then why worry? Can you do something about your problem? No, then why worry?
Right.
So I think it's good, words, good words to live by.
Well, it sounds like we're both on a good path. I like that. And that's, you know, and it has to show in your music because I'm telling you, I've been listening to the tracks we're going to play tonight. And they are fantastic. These are all, are you working on a new, like an album or an EP, or are you releasing? I know Whiskey Kind of Girl is a single that's been released. Are you just doing the, releasing singles? A lot of musicians do that
no.
now.
You know, everyone,
working
no,
on
no,
a,
no, no, no. Not for, well, for me, everyone has their own path and how they want to, and that's the freedom of choice in this. Everyone has their own way of doing things. And I'm old school. So I, you know, for me, like sitting down, I've always loved the idea of 12 tracks and opening up and reading the liner notes,
I love it.
Smelling the print out of the paper and, you know, looking at the photos that, you know, happened on tour. And music's just, it, you know, it's changing so dramatically. And, you know, I, at one point I really wasn't, I didn't know which way to go, because most artists now are doing these, like Trent Reznor did this three EP set of five tracks each that is kind of an umbrella that equals an LP, but most artists are going the EP route. So here's the pros and the cons. The album takes, you know, from a year and a half to 2 years. So right now I have enough material for either three EPs or an EP and then a record, a full length record right behind it. But I don't know if you watch the Grammys at all. So I watched the full thing, and there's this fabulous new artist. Her name is Her. She's actually out of Vallejo, and I love her because she writes, she performs, she produces. I mean, she's a true musician, and that in any genre, you're going to get my respect hands down. So she won for Album of the Year, and she got up on stage and she literally said, "This isn't right. I shouldn't be here. It's an EP." And I perked right up. I went, "Wait, what?" So I hopped on the computer. And now 5 years ago, when I joined the Grammys as a, you know, to be a voting member, you had to have a full LP, which consisted of 12 tracks, or what was it, like 30 minutes or 45 minutes or longer or something like that. And now, as of 2 years ago, the guidelines now, what consists of an album is five tracks or 15 minutes.
Really? They shortened it.
What? It's now from 12 to 5. And so if everyone is now shifting into this, you know, five-track record, the pros, at least to that, is you can have multiple releases in 1 year.
Right.
You know, but I think it also dictates on what style of music you're in if you do the single thing. I think that really kind of relates more to pop artists doing just a single a month. And I think for more... You know, my demographic, because I'm blues rock, and my demographic is really people from 35 to 65. And so the older blues cats, they don't want a single. They want a story, you know, with blues.
They do.
You know, you can't take that away from them. So I feel like there should be a middle ground. But, you know, with music now shifting to this, you know, instant gratification, I'm kind of on the fence if I want to do an EP and then a record right behind it, or just continue to do EPs if that's at least, you know, more modernized or whatnot. So the new record is called Point of No Return, and I'm pretty good, pretty well into it. So we're not that far away from this actually getting finished, which is great. But
so you've reached the point of no return.
Yes.
I'm just kidding. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Exactly. No, not at all. you know,
I saw my shot.
I really honed in. I've honed in on six tracks. I have of all the work from the last 2 years that I've been working on that really tell a story about it's the essence of the record is, you know, getting to a point where you cannot turn back, where believing in yourself that you can achieve your dream, no matter how big or how ridiculous it might seem, that you've got to believe in yourself and go for it. So it's still, you know, to me, it's still a record because you're still painting the picture. There's still the balance of it. But I see more and more artists doing the EP thing versus full length albums anymore. So this next one is going to technically be considered an album. There'll be seven tracks on it. So, I'm very much looking forward to it, you know, breaking, and then I'll be going on tour and doing a West Coast tour, and then hopefully down and through the South, because I have a very strong following in Texas.
Nice.
And then just, you know, it's nice. I mean, Texas, you can hit so many different, you know, there's so many different cities that you can hit in one state. So,
and they kind of change too, you know, the city, Texas is so big that, you know, like Austin's totally different than like, you know, Dallas or something, you know, as far as pop culture goes, and I imagine music, you know. I don't know, blues rock.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beattie, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are 2 separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another, a friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Ruxgear, the online webshop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierux.us.
Hey folks, located in the hills of Tennessee, L'Apothecary Unique offers all natural, organic, gluten-free skincare. Hair care products, perfumed oils, medicinal salves, makeup, incense, and aromatherapy items, bath salts, and even much more, including something special for the fellows, like beard and mustache balm, astringent, and aftershave. Each item is made to order just for you. So check out LapothecaryUnique.com, spelled LapothecaryUnique. L'ApothecaryUnique.com.
Blues rock's pretty cool. And you're absolutely right with the age demographic. As I get a little older, I appreciate blues rock so much more, just because, yeah, I can relate, you know. And, you know, you can only hear so many songs about heartbreak, you know what I mean? Or trying to hook up or whatever.
I love some of the artists that are in our modern pop, you know, genres that write about heartache, but you can't have every single song be about the same topic. It's, you know, give people a little bit of variety. So, I mean, it's the number one most written about topic.
An 18-year-old writing about how, you know, they'll never love again. I'm like, really? really? I remember thinking that, but I was wrong.
I know, but you know, on the flip side of that, remember little Michael with the Jackson 5, you know, he had his own little love song and he was how old, you know? So, I mean,
yeah, that's, I heard that the other day and I was thinking that same thing. I was like, oh, come on, man. Yeah. Cause you're right. Little kid singing that.
Yeah.
It's the whole Jackson thing's weird now anyway, with that whole Leaving Neverland. I mean, we all kind of knew it, but I don't think we had it in our face like that. And then, you know, it's just hard to, sometimes too much information is bad when it comes to art, you know, or artists, I should say.
Yes. I think on every level, too much information is a bad thing.
I had really fond memories of being a little kid and roller skating, you know, to really early Michael Jackson and stuff. And now I hear that and I'm just, and it always, whenever I'd hear those songs on oldies radio station or something, I'm like, I remember roller skating to this and being in love with that 12-year-old girl when I was 12, you know, 12-year-old boy or whatever. And now you hear it and you're like, oh, I got cringe. I'm like, what?
Isn't that funny? It's you know how the songs that we loved when we were kids, and then everyone has ebb and flow with music. So there's you have your favorites, you have the ones you grew up with, and then you have the ones that are just so nostalgic that remind you of a certain person or a certain time in your life and whatnot. And then you realize you feel old once you've heard it. And you
I'm telling you, there's a lot. I've noticed that on television shows too. In the age of Netflix and stuff, you know, I was such a nerd kid, and I'm the other day I'm like, oh, look at this, the original Battlestar Galactica. I loved that as a kid. I'm gonna watch a couple episodes here, and I couldn't get through one. I'm like, this is terrible. This is how did I
watch
it?
Oh my god! Remember when Fuller House came back?
Oh yeah.
And
that's a whole thing.
Used to watch that. Yeah, I used to watch that when I was a kid, and I could, same thing. I was like, I got through one episode, and that was it. It's like, okay, I'm not nine anymore.
Right.
Don't really have the attention span for this.
Well, hey, let's play a track so people know what we're talking about. I've got four tracks here. I've got Whiskey Kind of Girl, Aquarians, Rattle Me, and the instrumental Driving Me Crazy. What should we hit people with first, do you think, Teresa?
Let's go ahead and do Whiskey Kind of Girl.
Okay, this is the new single, and this is out right now, right? People can pick this up.
It is. It's on every major streaming platform for download as well through CD Baby and through my website. And, it's all over the place. It's kind of hard to miss it. You can just Google me.
Absolutely. Very cool. Very cool. Here it is. This is Teresa Topaz, Whiskey Kind of Girl.
Hey, bartender, make it a double. Bloody night, and you know what that means. Is drinking my whiskey.
track, everybody. That was Whiskey Kind of Girl by Teresa Topaz. I like that track a lot, Teresa. Very, very cool.
Right on, Jamie. Thank you so much. I know I'm very happy with it. It's sometimes difficult when you release music. It's like, oh, I wish I did this and I wish I did that. And I didn't have too many of those moments with this track. So it's a good thing.
Absolutely. I switched to whiskey about a couple years ago. I used to be a vodka drinker myself. And I don't know. I got old.
Yeah,
no, I can afford better booze. And the better booze, you don't feel it as bad.
That's very true. I've always wanted to write a love song to whiskey, and it's the one thing that I usually can just drink and I don't get a hangover the next day. So me and whiskey do very well together.
That's fantastic. Absolutely. Hey, we have a call. Let's take a call. Let's see. I don't know who this is, but we'll find out. Hello, caller. You're on the air with Teresa Topaz.
Hey, how you doing today, Josh?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Teresa, how are you doing? It's Vinny.
Hi, Vinny. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing? Sounds like you're doing great.
We're doing good. We're just chit-chatting on the air. I hope it's entertaining so far.
So far, so good. Get him to have you sing the national anthem for me. I'm just kidding.
Oh, my gosh. I've done that many times, but I do require a warm up. So,
so I got a question for Josh since I got you on the air, Josh, as well as Teresa. But I was wondering, I heard you guys talking about Michael Jackson. I was wondering about your thoughts about keeping him in radio airplay. What do you feel about that?
Well, do you want to go ahead, Teresa first or ladies first? Ladies first on that one.
Michael Jackson is an icon. I mean, he's right. the king of pop. I don't see how we could ever have him deleted out of music. I don't see how that's a possibility. I think it's really difficult when we start to focus on people's personal lives versus the music. And, you know, thank God musicians don't have it as bad as actors. But on the same token, I really feel like, you know, their personal lives are very separate from the music that they've created for us. And, you know, I remember the first time I heard Bad, and everything aside, no matter what, I would never not want to hear that again.
Right. And it's, you know, the thing is if you look at the history of rock and roll, and I don't want to spend the hour this person did this and that, but there was, you know, there is some icky stuff in any art form, in any art genre, I should say. Not with everybody, but there are a few, frankly, I don't want to know about Jerry Lee Lewis and his cousin, you know, or Elvis and his youngsters that he liked. It's just, but at the same time, you know, do we get rid of Elvis for that? You know, and yes, it's a little different. I get it. But, you know, there's still some. But then again, we live. Here's another danger that we come into. And I don't think this really applies in the Michael Jackson case. But it's very easy for us to apply our moral viewpoint where we are in pop culture and time and socially now to things of the past, you know. These guys, you know, back then did that. Well, it's kind of a different time. Not saying that's justified by any means, and we've improved from that point, but you can't, I don't know. I cringe when I hear, but that's just me. I'm not saying other people should, you know, and I turn the knob and listen to something else, but I'm not saying he should be censored by any means. No, I'm not a big fan of censorship. Hope that answered his question. Meanwhile, tell me about, oh man, I'm out on the plank, baby. I'm out on the plank. I'm just being charged.
You know, I agree with you. I think that, you know, we need to really kind of just focus on, people want to get always so intimate with people in the limelight. And there really needs to
be
a fine line between that, because there's so many musicians that have, God, just gotten into everything sky high. And, you know, there's a couple topics that I feel like musicians should never really get into, you know, politics, religion, and then personal. So those are the things that are, you know, it's fine if you want to have those kind of conversations with the people that are real close to you, but in out in public, that's, it's not your job role to talk about those things.
Right.
You're there to write music for people to put on when they're having a good day. So I feel like, you know, if we can kind of get back to those guidelines, you know, and just really focus on what that person's there to entertain you with, or whatever your medium is that you use, again, you know, in any form of art, just focus on that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I had a show I did last month, and as part of, it was a small intimate show, you know, not a lot of people, and it was designed this way. You know, there's only 20, 30 people there. And part of this, how they have it set up, is you have a question and answer session with these 30 people, and you're in this little room, and these people are looking at you and whatnot, you know, and they want it. And I know how the game's played, you know, they want the razzmatazz, and you know, when you were painting this, you know, what was the process, what was happening, and they don't want to hear the truth. They want to hear, you know, oh, I woken up from being blackout drunk. I was in an alley and I had this vision in my head. I had to get on canvas. You know, that's what they want to hear. It's like going to a pizza parlor. You want to see the guy throwing dough up in the air. Pizza tastes better, you know,
you think.
The reality is, and I was so tempted. I was there because there's a little mischievous part of me, you know, and they ask, well, what with this painting and blah, blah, blah. And I just wanted to say so bad, rent was, you know, I needed to pay an electric bill. And I knew that would sell quick. That's why I painted.
Right.
No one would. I didn't say that, you know what I mean? Because, you know, why ruin the mystique of the moment? But that doesn't sell any paintings, you know? I really wanted to. But I'm sure you get the same thing, you know, being a rock star and whatnot, when you're, you know, flying around in your Learjets and, you know, hanging out with models.
Right.
And, you know, dating business tycoons and whatnot. All after crashing a hotel room.
Right. I still have not yet completely done that. I said the word completely here. you know,
that whiskey sneaks up on you.
Oh, yes, whiskey always does. But, you know, we kind of bend the rules a little bit in the music industry. You know, we kind of get away with a little bit more as a leniency, but you know, it's all good faith, and I really feel at the end of the day there's something that's said for that key term, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, because at the end of the day, it means that you're happy. It means that you're enjoying life
right.
to its fullest. And, my God, you look at some of our rock stars. Look at Keith Richards, you know. I mean, B.B. King went to the day he couldn't play that guitar anymore, and it's like I feel
that's
like
right.
it's some of the most fulfilling lives, you know, because we get to live, play, and experience such amazing stages and audiences and seeing what joy do we bring to people's faces. So.
Well, and I'm telling you right now, we all have our past. Let me put it this way.
Yeah.
I lived life, you know, but pretty fast for a while. Not so much anymore. Not at all really anymore, but I found other things to focus on. Simple as
right.
that. But the thing is, you know, I was at a party a couple weeks ago, and I was talking to somebody was talking about Keith Richards, the Rolling Stones. Oh, they're going on tour. Why would they do that? They don't need the money. And I'm like, and I said this story before, but and I told this guy, I said, you know, I said, have you ever been to a show? And I said, you don't see this with painters. You see it with musicians, though. When they're on stage, all the cylinders are firing. They're in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
They're throwing that. They have all this energy, and it's going out in the audience, and the audience bounces it back, and it builds, and there's this magical, really cool, I don't want to sound all California and New Agey, but just magic, you know, that's happening. And I said, I've partied a lot in my day. I've drank a lot of whiskey, let me put it that way, and other things. I've never had a cocktail that put that look on my face that I see that musician have when all that's happening. And I'm like, that's why they're on tour. They don't want to give that up, man. They probably can't give it up.
No.
You know, that's lightning in a bottle right there.
I call it the Zen moment, and it's something very magical happens on stage, and you kind of just forget that everyone else is watching. And it's
right.
this magic that happens between two people, three people, five people, however big your band is, just being up on stage and performing something that you wrote from the heart. it's addicting. It literally is. You're right. There's no amount of drugs, drinks, or meditation that can get you that particular feeling. And it's, you know, a lot of musicians, when they have to stop for medical reasons, they're, right. you know, they're not with us for much longer, because that is that we live for it. It's a drug. Music is a drug.
Right. Absolutely.
And
I think that's why a lot of musicians get into other stuff too, is, you know, they're like, when they're not, you know, it's like, the Sherlock Holmes, you know, how Conan Doyle wrote him when he wasn't on the case, he had to keep his mind occupied, you know, and that's, he did cocaine and stuff like that. And I know that was just a fiction story, but I think a lot of musicians, a lot of artists, not just musicians, get into that. Easy to wade into that, you know, trying to capture that that feeling and whatnot. I've seen a lot of people tangle with that tiger, and doesn't always end well. Sometimes it works.
Sometimes, but not always.
Not always. Generally, not the rule of thumb. No. Don't go. Let me put it this way: for any youngsters listening, if you think you're going to, nobody ever planned it would just all work out. They won the lottery. They were very lucky. A lot of people it didn't. So,
exactly.
Watch your poison.
Yeah, you never know.
Oh, I'm telling you. I'm telling you.
Watch your poison. I like that.
That's right. Be smart. Handle your scandal.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime, and treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit MakingCancerHistory.com.
Hey guys, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, last year I was on holiday with my girlfriend Danny. We were at Disney World and having a great time. It's the happiest place on earth. And I dropped my vape, just like a Butterfingers, and it was a pain in the neck. They just don't have anything there to replace it and whatnot. So we had to drive 45 minutes each way to get a new one. And, you know, that's an hour and a half out of our day, man. But anyway, that wouldn't have happened because if I would have had this fantastic new product, the C-Ring. It's very, very cool. What it is it attaches to your vape, designed to protect your investment with comfort, flexibility while doing your day-to-day activity. What it does is it goes in there, you put your finger in there, and you hold it, and you're not dropping your vape, breaking it and whatnot. It's very, very cool, and if you need both hands, they have a lanyard you can hook to, and it's awesome. It's awesome. The C-Ring, you can find out more about it and pick one up at their website, www.thecring.com. Again, that's www.thecring.com. Be smart, be like me, get a C-Ring if you're a vapor. Very, very good. Oh, and hey, holidays are coming up, man. This is a very cool gift for somebody. If you have somebody on your shopping list that vapes like I do, get them a C-Ring. Thecring.com.
Now, the next track we're going to play, we've got Aquarians and Rattle Me. What should we do next, Teresa?
Let's do Aquarians is my favorite track off the last record. Aquarians, I call it my cinematic rock epic, and it's a very big movement track. And I'm going to let the song speak for itself.
Well, here it is, everybody. This is Teresa Topaz, Aquarians.
We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone. The good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful. But we have lost the way.
Come on, rise up and join me as one.
need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost.
What a track! What a track, Teresa! I love it!
That's a fun one.
I like that Charlie Chaplin sample at the end there. That is cool,
yeah,
well, baby.
It's it's a track about, our power as human beings and standing up for our voices, and it just fits so perfectly from The Great Dictator. And I love being able to add any element to help really create the vibe for the song. And it just worked perfectly. But that's such a fun song to play live because I have an entire light show that my engineers programmed, and it's literally syncopated to the songs themselves. And I have quite a dynamic light show with a 12-foot truss system with a color drape and then lights on either side and floor lights. And so it's really cool with the lightning scenes and then the guns because there's lasers. I mean, it's cool. You've got to see that song live.
Nice. And I like the use of samples. And I kind of grew up in that era, I mean, I was a weirdo art student, I went to a lot of industrial clubs. And they always have a sample. Let me put it this way. Old, Trent Reznor and the boys and everybody else, Skinny Puppy, et cetera, they liked their samples. And because it adds to the thing, And it's something you don't hear that much. I mean, frankly, I think they should get rid of this auto-tune and bring the sampling back. But that's just me, I'm a crotch.
Yeah.
Like the hair.
I love that you brought up industrial because it's funny because I had such a wide inspiration with music, but with my own personal influences that I found growing up, Tool and Nine Inch Nails they were in my top five, period. And so my God, Trent Reznor is an absolute genius of what, when it comes to music, and I think I own every single album between both bands, and, there's so much influence. It doesn't matter what style of music that you end up becoming your own, but there's always something to be inspired with in every style of music. They're all the same notes, just how they're played.
Absolutely. I think I bought Pretty Hate Machine about 12 times. Every girl that came over to my apartment seemed to leave with it. They always pocketed it. And I'm like, man, I got it was cassettes because, that was I'm very old.
Stop, you're old when you're dead.
That's true. That is true. I was just talking to a band I interviewed out of Sweden a week ago, and they're releasing their debut album on cassette, which is great because I actually have a cassette player, but I don't know that many other people who do. But I thought it was different. I'm like, well, that's something you don't hear much of anymore.
I've heard that cassettes are making a comeback.
Well, there you go. They probably are. These two seem to have their finger on the pulse, 15 minutes from now. And I bought that tape a lot, man. I don't know. I helped Trent out back in the day.
You did your fair share.
That's right. Tool a lot, too. Oh, man, Tool. Tool would mess you up. Tool is one of those ones the first time you listen to the lyrics, you're like, Jesus Christ, this is bad, but I got to listen to the next one,
Heavy
duty stuff.
Aquarians, though, what a
track.
Thank you. It was funny because I was scared of that song when we were doing the last record. And I think it was one of the last songs that I attacked. And the funny thing is just like that Zen moment we were talking about when musicians get up on stage. That song was the quickest to write, and it was the quickest to mix as well. And there was just a magic that happened in that track. And normally, every writer has their own ways of composing a song. And I normally do all my writing in the evening. I'm a night owl.
Mm-hmm.
And that song, I literally had just poured my coffee. It was 9:30 in the morning, and I sat down and I read an article, and I read the combination of two words together. And the song flew out of me, and it ended up being like 4 pages. And I remember looking at it going, crap, now I got to edit this. So,
right.
and then, with composing it, and recording it, I remember everything just fell into place, and it was just so easy. And I remember there's so many layers to that song. I remember my engineer going in the beginning, okay, wait, this is going to get tricky. And he had it done in no time. It was so easy for him. I mean, that song on every person, well, it was really me and him. I composed and performed every instrument, but bass, it was Mr. Keith Waters on bass for the entire album, but instrumental wise and vocals, I did everything else. And that, it just came together. So those, like we were talking about, those vibrations, they carry over. So people can pick up on that. And I think subconsciously they hear that it just lent itself to no frustration. And it's just a great song.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love when things come together like that. It's in my world, everybody thinks they, cause what it is in, like in your world, they hear the finished product and they're like, oh, that's amazing. You know, and everything with me, they see the finished product and they think, oh, you know, nothing was on TV last night. He whipped that out. Sometimes that's true. It's real rare.
Mm-hmm.
Pulling my hair out and wanting to throw the canvas in the street and jump up and down on it. But
right.
I haven't.
Find
well,
the balcony,
you know,
to throw it off of?
Oh, I'm telling you, man, I am telling you. And, you know, I shouldn't say this on the air because people will see the thing, because I will win. The painting will get done and it will be the way I want it. But, man, I'm having that with one right now.
Oh, no.
So people next week will go, okay. But, yeah, it's just a lot of, you know, and it shouldn't be. All the math is right on it. Everything should work the way it's supposed to. It's not. It's not.
You know, if art was easy, everybody would do it. There's those moments of, you know, where hair pulling, a lot of cursing. You know, there's moments where you just stare at it, whether it's your canvas or your recording software, and just going, what do I do with this? How do I make this work? And, you know, you do X amount of work one day and you come back and you hate it. And it was 5 hours spent and you got to undo. So it's that's the thing. It, you never know what's going to come out of you. And then there's just those beautiful moments of connection where it's just glowing. And I'm determined to figure out how to schedule that because it makes my life a lot easier.
Exactly.
I'll let you know when,
man,
I've accomplished that. I'll share it with you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, I was looking at your website, and I want to let people know it's teresatopaz.com. Very easy to get to. Very easy to navigate. Teresa, I got to tell you, man, I am friends with all these weirdo artist people, and their websites just suck. You know what I mean? I can't find anything, and I tell them, and they're like, well, did you give this monkey the banana and the tree? I'm like, I don't want to do that. I just want to see your paintings, man. Just have it easy for me. I'm an old man. Your website's very easy to navigate. I love it. It's great looking. This is a great, fantastic website. Whoever did it,
well, thank you.
See him, buy him a cup of coffee because they earned it.
Well, that would be buying myself a cup of coffee because I maintain it. I appreciate that very much because I think overall it's just, you know, I try to look at from a newcomer or someone who's coming to the site for the first time, I want to make things as easy to manage and to reach as possible. So it
Absolutely.
Was much more complex when the site first went up. You know, it's just you find what works, what doesn't work over time. And I did all the artwork for the album as well.
Nice.
Again, a lot of frustrating, screaming moments in Photoshop trying to find that balcony again. But people's attention spans, so you don't get a lot of time for someone first coming to the site. So I think the goal is to just give them what they're looking for on every page and make it fun to work their way around.
Oh, absolutely. I love your logo, too. You have it on the back of your, and people on our show page will see it in the Flash player. It's going through the your cool leather. Number one, that's an awesome jacket. But I love the, and the logo's on
Thank
the back.
You.
I love that logo. That one with the hat and the lipstick. Fantastic. Good logo.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. It's funny, for the photo shoot for Reset Me, that's actually traced off of a photo. And so that's me sitting on a laptop with my finger on the mouse pad, tracing that photo, and then just blacking out everything, and it just worked. So it's
and I gotta tell you,
again,
any young new people starting a new rock band or a new metal band of some sort or whatnot, look at Teresa's logo. That's what you need. Something simple that will reduce small on a flyer. They always send me, Teresa, they send me, you know who has a terrible logo? Great band, classic band, terrible logo, Queen. Oh my gosh, that's like so, you know, you have, it's too much. And all these bands try to do it. They're like, well, did you see the graveyard and the full moon and the cat and the UFO? And I'm like, man, just take some of that out, please. Because when you shrink it, you're not going to see any of it.
You're not going to see it. And I think that's you know, the Grammys have wonderful, meetups, I guess, and classes randomly at your chapter. There's not very many chapters, but I went to one, and it was about marketing. And, you know, there's some cardinal rules when it comes to logos. The more simple, the better. Look at Rolling Stones, the lips. You look at that one image. It doesn't even have to say
Fantastic.
Rolling Stones, and you know what that is. And
it's like a McDonald's Golden Arches.
Exactly.
Recognizable worldwide.
Yeah. It's got to be simple and memorable. And the biggest, thing is, especially when it comes to color, choose tokens on that. Really, you shouldn't have more than three colors. On the flip side, if you have more than three colors or three or more colors, when you go to print, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg. So when Nirvana first had it's true. Right. And they made that t-shirt. It was cheaper for them to do that smiley face in one color because they couldn't afford to have three or four colors. Like, I think the original artwork had like three colors in it. You know, so it kind of hurts you financially when you're just starting out. Or want something that's just memorable, just stick it simpler, more simple, the better.
Absolutely. Well, that's fantastic. Now I wanted to tell people too, at your website, teresatopaz.com, are links to, everything, in the Teresa Topaz world, right there on the right, where you can hear all the music, buy the music, et cetera. But underneath that are links to all of Teresa's social media. So you can follow, share, subscribe, do what you got to do. Check out our Pinterest page, man. It's awesome. And, like and share that stuff. It's very, very important for people not in the business. I don't think a lot of people realize this. When Teresa has a meeting with usually some guy in a polo shirt and a ponytail, he'll ask her this question. He'll say, well, what's the engagement? Thinking he's all cool. All of that helps, the liking and sharing. That makes Teresa be able to talk in a much better way or a better position. It's so true. Music business has changed, and all that's important. People want to know the wife and all this kind of stuff. They do promoters and the wife.
You'd be shocked when it comes to a lot of my endorsements with companies. It's like that's one of the first questions out of their mouth is how many likes do you have? And in the realm of the way music business has gone over the years, it's kind of strange that it's gone to the likes versus how good is the music. So it's unfortunately it is in that world that if you like an artist, no matter who it is, make sure to like their page, share their page, because that support goes a very long way.
And chances are your friends are going to dig what you're digging too, because that's your friends,
Yeah.
You guys like the same things, So if you find some, if my friends, I have a whole, this is episode 830 or something like that, of people going, hey, this is a cool band, check them out. Or this is a cool movie, check it out. Yeah, exactly. And that's how, it used to be people would get this big loan, a music deal, and, they would handle a lot of that stuff. And a lot of people don't know how that works either. I hear so many people starting out that were just jonesing, I got to get a deal. Really?
It's really not that way anymore because, 20 years ago, it used to be. You either had to fill a room or just be an amazing musician that they thought they could, make a buck off. But the one thing that people don't – it's called a 360 deal in the record world.
Right.
And every deal is a little different. But, back then, the record industry dumped, you know, let's say, you know, $150,000 into a band between marketing, promotions, radio, duplication or CD duplication, vinyl duplication, and tour support. So what they don't think about is, yes, you got the record deal, but you have, they recoup their cost before you get paid anything, and you're given a $20 per day per diem. And so, like, right. Nirvana, when Nevermind went gold, those boys were still living on 20 bucks a day. It wasn't until, you know, In Utero was in the recording studio, that's when they started to see some money. So nowadays, you know, and again, every company's a little different in how they handle things, but most of the time, if you're just, you know, if you're a singer or just a guitar player and need, you know, to be paired up with a band or whatnot, then record labels, you know, will pair you with what you need and do everything and still follow those rules. It's either that or pretty much now it's what's called distribution. So, and in order to even gain that, they want to see where you chart on Billboard. They want to see your CD sales. They want to see you be completely independent. And to the point where you've already gained distribution. You're already dealing with every major streaming service that's available. You're up there. You have a following. It's like, well, then what's the point of the deal then? You know, I mean, and the biggest thing for me nowadays is to all musicians who are listening and starting out, keep your masters. Do not give up ownership of your music, period. If you're nowadays, you don't have to give it up. Back then you had to. So times are changing, and it's, you know, it's our jobs as musicians how to outsmart the business.
Absolutely. And you got to know your business. That is so important. And I know it's a drag for all you creative types out there to, oh, business, I don't want to be the man. You do want to be the man. When you have mortgages and stuff you have to pay, you have to be the man. That's, you know, absolutely
you
true.
Have to.
In the art world, it's the same thing. You know, people ask me all the time, they're like, well, you put your paintings, we have paintings on car mats and beach towels and everything. But you know what? There's a big cash outlay before that happens of licensing and all of that. You know, you can't do that kind of stuff.
No.
You know, people don't know that, and they don't know how to do it. Educate yourself. Learn how to do it. You know, you're walking around with all of human knowledge in your pocket. Use it. Figure that out, or hire somebody to do it, you know?
Right. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, because that's what helps a musician in this day and age survive. So it's, you know, if you want to go for the big stages and you want that big dream to come true, you have to realize that this is a business at the end of the day. A lot of musicians just want to play, and I don't blame them, because I do too, but I still have to represent myself. I still have to manage. I still have to, you know, deal with public media, my PR side of things. I have, you know, you have to be self-sufficient, and remember, at the end of the day, if you don't have that key, then you're just going to, you know, be in the same realm that you are currently. It's not going to help you get any farther, or you're financially able to hire a PR firm. You're able to handle, you know, hire a publicist, a manager, you know, and these people help you get to those routes. But sometimes in the beginning, you can't afford them. So you just have to keep stabbing at it and keep pushing until you get there.
Well, and it's like we talked with working on the car, know how it works. So when you do hire those people, you know what you're paying for.
Exactly.
You know, you want it. I could do a whole show on nightmares that people have had, not knowing.
Oh no!
You know, just dealing from a place of ignorance and learning those learning curves. Oh my God, I've heard such terrible stories. You know, well, you know, we maxed every credit card we had out, and I said, why would you send it to somebody in another country? You know, but anyway, I don't want to get into all that. But
well,
you gotta learn that stuff.
There's mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. That's how we learn.
It's
and
true.
I think the best thing, though, is make sure you learn from that mistake and don't do it again.
That's right. And if it's a $2,000 mistake, be glad it wasn't a $2,500 mistake.
It can always be worse. You know, I mean, when I was starting out, believe me, I made several mistakes of throwing a lot of money at the wrong styles of promotion that didn't do anything for me. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, different fields, I guess, in the music industry. Make sure, I think something that I can give as advice is make sure that if you are going to start hiring firms or people to help you do what you do, that they're trustworthy, because that should come from a recommendation from a friend. know who you're dealing with, because there's a lot of horror stories of musicians dropping $25,000, $5,000, $10,000 for companies to, you know, send out their information to radio stations and magazines and things like that, and nothing ever came of it. Because you don't know if a company on the other side of the country is doing what they say they're going to do. So,
or if it's even a company. I've heard those stories,
right,
too.
Oh, yeah.
Some
you know,
guy in a basement somewhere. Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
you know, and that's hard-earned money from people. You know, that's their wage that they've taken out of, you know, to, you know, buy food or wherever it's coming from. But still, it's not money to just throw around. So a lot of it, though, you can do on your own. I will tell you that you've just got to, you know, put the time aside and do as much as you can on your own until you're faced with not being able to handle it anymore and need outside sources.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's with anything, you know, I mean, in life, you come to a point where it's like, oh, I better get an accountant. You know, we're at that point now. I remember a lot of times years where we weren't at that point, but it just, you know, you things happen and you grow is what happens. And, you know, creative types do as well, in their, well, hopefully in their, professions and whatnot. Hey, we have the last track we're going to play tonight. This is Rattle Me. Tell us a little bit about this one.
Rattle Me is kind of a feistier song. You know, we touched on a little earlier in the conversation today about, you know, when I was kind of first starting out and, you know, people would think that my engineer is the act and I'm just the girlfriend and that kind of scenario. So I got a little angry. So they rattled me. So I wrote a song about it.
Nice. See, there you go. I had a friend of mine,
right?
Whose gal left him. He was he's a country musician, and he came down here to you know, spend a week sitting on the beach and drinking some tequila. Hey, we've all been there. But he was just in this. There's nothing, and you know this, Teresa. There's nothing worse than a heartbroken guy musician. Maybe a heartbroken guy painter,
no.
But you know it's. Women handle that so much better than men do, it seems. I don't know. At least in my experience.
Well, the funny thing is whether you're male or female, don't piss the musician off because we will write a song about you.
That's look at Taylor Swift. She made a whole career doing that, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. He was here and he was crying in his beer and he was saying, you know, I don't know if I'm going to get through this, Jamie. I don't know if I can do it. And I said, man, you're a country. This is fuel for a whole album. Are you kidding me?
Yep.
Work, buddy. Get your mind off of it and get some tracks laid. Let's go. Anyway, this is Rattle Me. Teresa was rattled. She wrote a song about it. We're going to play it. So here it is. Rattle Me, Teresa. Rattle Me. What a track. What a track. I'm rattled now. Fantastic. Teresa, I like that one. I like that. See, you turned that around. You turned it into a positive. I like that. That's the whole philosophy.
Every situation has the good and the bad, and it's about perception. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Now, you're in the album, a process of doing this, so we can expect, now I hate to ask, this is a hot seat question, I hate it. Ballpark time frame, what do you think, another year on this, or you think it'll be a lot sooner?
Less than a year. It will be this year that the new record is released.
Nice, nice. And so, folks, we can all keep the date on the product or the progress with that by liking her social media pages, see? And then we get to see when we look at Facebook every day what's happening. Very cool. I'm excited, man. That is great. That is awesome. You're working on this.
Yeah.
Things are just happening, and it's great work. Oh, it's just fantastic. And now, Aquarians is people can buy that on your website as well. Is Rattle Me out yet or not yet?
That's Rattle Me is on Reset Me. Both tracks, Aquarians and Rattle Me, are on Reset Me, and that is available for purchase on my website.
Nice.
It's a download from iTunes. You can purchase it from Amazon. Every streaming service that both the album and the new single are on are linked to the front page of my website. So you'll see it'll say title or Spotify. Buy on
nice.
eBay, and it'll take you directly to it to make it real easy. There's also a shop page on my website as well. So both of those are out into the open, into the world of the internet, and soon will come the new record. So very excited and cannot wait till that's wrapped up and we're getting out and doing shows.
Wow, fantastic. Well, I can't wait either. I can't wait either. And you've made a new friend in Southern South Florida here, so, you know.
Excellent. Well, we will be coming out
when you
your
guys
way
are on
day.
Tour. There you go. I always tell my friends to go on tour, and I'm like, yeah, we have a guest room. We're 10-minute walk from the beach, and they're like, yeah, whatever. And then here's how I hook them. I'm like, and we have two showers and a washer and dryer. And they're like, we'll
there
be there.
Cha-ching.
Oh, man. Nobody likes to be in the laundromat on tour. That's no fun.
No, it's not. I'm very spoiled with those kind of things. So, I do look forward to meeting you face-to-face one day and seeing your art and chit-chatting in person.
Very cool. And ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. We went a little long tonight. I apologize. It's just Teresa's fascinating, you know, and we were just chatting away. This episode, of course, will be converted to a podcast and pushed on all the various podcasting platforms and social media platforms also. If you are listening to the podcast in the future, hello from the past. Do me a favor, though. Just like Teresa, it helps me out tremendously when I'm talking to advertisers. Hit that ratings and review. That keeps, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, that keeps us up at the top of the page, and it just really annoys all of my ex-girls. No, I'm kidding. I don't even know about it, but no, it helps me talking to advertisers. Keeps the lights on around here, man. Awesome. Very, very cool. Teresa, a final thought. I'm going to tell you, you already know this, but I'm going to tell you anyway in case you haven't heard it today, and I doubt that, but keep doing what you're doing. You are so good at it. I mean, just so talented, you know?
I really appreciate
Sincerely.
You saying that, James. That's why I do what I do. It's if I can write a song that's going to make people happy and give them joy when they listen to it, then I've done my job. So thank you very much for that.
Wow, very cool. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow's Thursday. Super late show. Well, not super late. 10 o'clock on here on the East Coast and 7 o'clock out on the West. Have a very cool alternative band on tomorrow. They're called 222. The number 2, 3 times. So there you go. 2 cubed. If you No, don't do that because that's a whole different thing. But anyway, tune in tomorrow and, it'll be a lot of fun. Teresa, have a great night. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Jim, so much for having me. I truly appreciate you. Have a rocking night, my friend.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye. This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.